window.
Good morning. Today is Friday, December 16th, and the time is 9:03 a.m. I now call the meeting of the Finance Commission to order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. We have several members, Will Lucas, Sharon McCormick, Debbie Scanlon, and Laura Warren contacted me to say they have indicated not attending, they will not be able to attend today's meeting due to a business conflict, and requested that their absences be excused in accordance with the Finance Code 11.103. The commission members will take a vote to either accept or deny this request. All in favor excusing their absences, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. The ayes have it, and their absences are excused. We also have Commissioner Cooper away on a business meeting, so Deputy Commissioner Wendy Rodriguez will conduct a roll call at this time for us.
Mr. Chairman, Bob Warpop.
Here.
Victor Cerna.
Present.
Martin Green.
Present.
Will Lucas is not here. Cliff McCauley.
Here.
Sharon McCormick is not here. Rosie Morris.
Here.
Chris Puente.
Absolutely.
Debbie Scanlon is not here, and Lauren is not here. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Thank you very much. We will now move on to Finance Commission matters. If there is anyone wishing to address the commission during the time of public comment, please fill out a witness affidavit form and bring it up to the front. Public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and agenda items to 10 minutes. Any comments relating to the rule may be made at this time of the rule discussion. In accordance with the Finance Commission's policy on testimony, public comments are not allowed on agenda items related to the final rule adoptions except upon a majority vote of the commission, in which comments are limited to 10 minutes. Do we have any audience members wishing to provide a general comment today? Seeing none. Members, before we take up consent agenda items A1, C2, C3, and D2 in a single vote, I want to state that any commission members may request that an agenda item be removed from the consent agenda and be placed on their regular agenda so that it may be discussed and voted on individually. Also, members, as a reminder, please state your name before making or seconding a motion. Do I hear a motion to adopt the consent agenda items A1, C2, C3, and D2 without any discussion?
So moved.
Bob Warshaw. Thank you. Is there a second?
Marty Green, second.
Thank you, sir. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, and the motion carries. We'll now move on to item number 4, Finance Commission Operations.
Thank you, Chairman. Just a couple of items to bring to your attention, members. Just a reminder that the legislative session will begin January 10th, which is a couple of weeks away. Pre-filing started on November 14th, and as of that first filing date, there was 914 bills filed, so we're going to be busy. In comparison to the previous session, pre-filing date on the first day was 536. So we had an increase of bill filing. As of this morning, I checked and there's a little over 1,300 bills that have already been pre-filed. So just kind of giving you a gauge as to where we're at. Beginning every Monday after the session begins, members will receive a report once a week from the agencies. And the report will show bills that are being tracked by the agencies of importance to the Finance Commission. And of course, if you have questions, as always, you are free to contact us and we can give you some more information on that. So your first report will be on January 16th. Okay. Also, given that the session is starting, we highly encourage you to book your hotels. Rooms will get scarce come February and March and April. So be on the lookout for rooms for your next meetings. And Chairman, that is all.
I will just add a couple of comments to Wendy. Thanks for that. You'll have in your package today from each of us an example of what that your report's going to look like on a weekly basis. And it has an explanation of our review and of the bill and analysis, a very brief one. And then it'll have items, actions related to those particular bills. And I'm just also going to mention that bills can be filed up until March the 10th. So at that point, we won't see new bills added to the list. We'll just see actions happening on the remainder of the bills till the end of May. But just a couple extra comments on that process.
Just members, just February 17th will be our next meeting date, and April 22nd, both of which Wendy mentioned will be falling during the legislative session. So those are the dates to put for your hotels. At this time, for the audit committee section of the meeting, we're going to ask Vice Chairman Cliff McCauley to act as chair. And I will present to the commission the report for the audit committee.
Okay, we will now move on to item five. Chairman Holt, please give us the audit committee.
The audit committee would like to make a motion that the finance commission approve the agency's fiscal year 2023 internal auditor's risk assessment and audit plan.
Coming upon the recommendation from the audit committee, no second is needed. Is there any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Guys have it, motion passes.
This concludes the audit committee discussion. Thank you so much, Mr. McCauley. I'll resume control of the meeting as the chairman of the finance commission. We will now move on to items 6 through 9. Commissioners, do you have anything that needs to be discussed in the open sections for 6 through 9?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
No.
Moving on to Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending. Commissioner Retta, it's up to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We'll start with page 17 of the package that you had. Just a couple of preliminary comments on the landscape in which we're operating. This week, Deputy Commissioner Stephanie Trotty held her emerging issues call with the savings banks and referenced the Beige Book and Beige Book, which comes out from the Federal Reserve with respect to the 11th District. And it of course, gives an overview of the economic conditions that are in place. And made reference to dampening loan demand with loan volumes that are declining, modest economic growth and retail sales softening, but employment still strong. Just to give you an idea of the landscape in which we're operating, as I referenced, there this week there were several developments that I think that were notable that will have an impact across the board. We did have the report that came with respect to the inflation rate, declining the 12-month inflation rate in November down to 7.1%. So it seems to be moving in the right direction in terms of how the Federal Reserve looks at arresting inflation. So that is what we're seeing on that front. On the other hand, the Chairman Powell with the Federal Reserve did come back and say he's very committed to working down to a 2% inflation rate. And so there's a big difference between 7.1% and 2%. So I think if most observers look at it saying it will be a bumpy ride, a bumpy economy, it's the outlook for the next year. The Federal Reserve also, the monetary policy met this week and increased the federal funds target rate by 50 basis points. The implications for that, I think we're all familiar with that. Again, that commitment by the Federal Reserve to continue to have increases, the 50 basis points increase followed 4 consecutive 75 basis points increase. So it's a step, I think, in the direction of showing that there has been some success by what the Federal Reserve measures success to be. GOP projections were also slightly adjusted upward for this year, but downward for next year. So again, I think the reference to the economic conditions being somewhat uncertain, we will have to live through that and see what happens. In terms of mortgage interest rates, which is more near and dear to the heart of us in the savings and mortgage lending department, this week Freddie Mac reported that the average is down to 6.31%. So it shows over the last 6 weeks a decline of 77 basis points. Now that can change, certainly, but that has certainly been received well by the mortgage community. Mortgage applications actually increased this last week for the first time after a month of decline, so that's a positive. There are still a lower number of originations this year compared to last year. That's obvious. I think we've all been aware of that. Delinquency rates remain low. Foreclosure rates remain very low. And so we continue to feel that the industry is in a stable condition with respect to dealing with that changing situation with mortgage rates in the mortgage market. So that's the environment in which we're operating, just some overview statements. We'll go now to page 17. We'll get into particulars. We'll start with talking about the Savings Bank Thrift Regulation Division activities. And in here, you can see by the table that we now have 21 savings banks, total assets of $411 billion. The industry remains quite strong. There's nothing alarming that we've seen as we go through the metrics that we'll cover here, but they all reflect well-capitalized, sustained asset quality performing industry. And so there's nothing that we look at that we would say this is something about which to be alarmed. Certainly the outlook for sustained higher interest rates is there, but we are certainly aware of that and looking at that. We do have one change, as you will see in the table, that we do have one informal supervisory action that is in place. We referenced that at the last Finance Commission meeting, that it was coming, and so it is in place, and that is being addressed and will be worked through in concert with the FDIC. I can take you then to page.
Just a question. What about the dip in assets from March to September?
The dip in assets that we're looking at in total assets really is reflecting more than anything else, the total deposits or the deposit side, because it reflects a customer of the banks, their customer determination as to the disposition of their cash holdings. So it doesn't represent anything beyond that, just a disposition of cash holdings, which generally speaking, what was in cash, they're now moving down to another.
Perhaps stimulus money that's leaving the institutions.
It is something that we anticipated, and in our budget we forecast that we would have that decline.
What did you mean by that?
Well, folks got stimulus and they kept the cash and now they're spending it.
A lot of us had to start repaying it this week.
Well, there you go.
It struck me that that might have had something to do with it. I know in the restaurant industry it was a big issue last week. A whole bunch of people around the country said we need it to be delayed, and that's...
Yeah, you were referencing the SBA loans.
Yeah, the title loans.
Right.
And it's a big chunk of money for a lot of people.
This is more consumer deposits.
Okay, so it's not.
Right.
Okay, got it.
Okay, if we go now then to the next page, again, running through the metrics that we report on the capital, you can see that in terms of the risk-based capital ratios and tier one leverage ratio, that we're quite strong and well, the industry is quite strong and well above the minimums that are in place. Earnings continue strong. We have net interest margin of 3.96%. As I referenced earlier, non-performing assets continue to be low. On page 19, I draw your attention to the long-term assets to total assets, a slight decline there. So that, as you can see in the commentary, is exposure to changing interest rates over time. So we look at that development favorably. And then in terms of liquidity, the net non-core funding dependence ratio is a negative 0.66%, and the deposit to lending activity is 82.28. So in the loan deposit ratio, so again, very strong. So as referenced earlier, there's nothing that we look at that is problematic at this point in time. On page 20, in terms of supervisory or supervision activity report, we have no merger activity to report or effective since the last Finance Commission meeting. In terms of outreach and training, Deputy Commissioner Trotty did an opportunity to participate in the FDIC banker outreach panel. And then we had our senior supervisory compliance examiner, Mr. Poe, Bill Poe, who participated in the regulator panel as well with IBAT on November 4th. So that's a summary of what the Thrift division has been working with. If there are no questions, then we'll go to the mortgage regulation section on page 20. The table below, the first table, reflects the growth in the number of licensees and registrations and branch locations from a year ago, October 31st, to October 31st of this year. It's up 20%. If we go up to the next page and we discuss the licensing activity report, you can see that in terms of licensing activity, during the first 2 months of this quarter, processed 2,027 applications, approved 1,625 applications. The renewal period, we are currently in the renewal period, which runs from the 1st of November until the end of the year. As a whole, the renewals rate that we were seeing is down relative to last year. It's down approximately 17% for the department. There was a call this week with the American Council of State Savings Supervisors. I participated in that call, in the board call they had, and they reported that nationwide it's about 60%. That the renewal of licenses is down. So we're consistent with what's going on in the nation, consistent with what is happening in the entire mortgage world. In terms of the mortgage examination activity report, a couple of things that I should point out here. You can see that we're running slightly behind what would be the normal quarterly number of examinations that we would expect to do. The budget for the year is 550 examinations. As of yesterday, we had 88 so far this quarter. We should be one-fourth of that 550, which is about 137, 138, so we're slightly behind. And the primary reason for that, or reasons for that, are really three. We had a change, a departure of a very experienced, seasoned processor of the loan application. So there were some hitches internally in terms of keeping that at the volume that it was before. We have since, and you'll see that in the human resource report, we have since hired someone, so that's getting back engaged. Mortgage Director William Purse also made some improvements, some changes in the examination process itself. And so that created a little bit of delay in putting those in place and training people with the new process that was in place. And then probably, well, not probably, most likely the biggest reason is a total of 325 hours were spent in terms of training on reverse mortgages. And that's referenced down below in outreach and training. But obviously, if you have 325 hours that you spend on training and you're out of production on the examination side, you're going to fall behind in the number of examinations that were done. So it's all explicable. It's not worrisome. But I wanted to give you some idea of why we were running behind on that. In terms of outreach and training, both Director Purse and I had the opportunity to address the Houston Mortgage Bankers Group and then the Texas Mortgage Bankers Group, the Association Group in San Antonio. And then I've made reference to the training that took place that occupied a lot of the time of the examiners this month. Are there any questions? If not, then we can move to the operations division activities. On the operations side, make reference in here in the first section to the legislative activity that Commissioner Page and Deputy Commissioner Reeves referenced as well, that is available. We passed out a copy of the telecom report to give you an idea of what you will be receiving weekly from the department to keep you updated on that. In terms of human resources, we have the staffing charts here at the bottom of page 22. And then the top of page 23, we now have 59 regular full-time employees. I referenced earlier the hiring of a new administrative assistant that will help the examination process in the mortgage sector or the mortgage side. And then we did hire an executive assistant for the department. And so that too, I think, will make a difference and help us get back to where we need to be in terms of operating as efficiently as we should. And then very importantly, we did, as you know, Ernest Garcia, or General Counsel Ernest Garcia, left to take another opportunity with the Attorney General's office. After a number of interviews, a number of considerations and deliberations, some of you may be aware that Deputy Counsel Ian Berry was promoted to General Counsel. And so he'll be reporting later in just a minute with respect to the legal activities, legal and enforcement activities. In terms of, if I can take you now to customer complaints on page 24, and at this time I'll also ask General Commissioner Berry to step forward. He'll be speaking in just a second. But in terms of the complaints, you'll see that we've had a almost 11% decrease in the number of complaints this year, and we think that likely reflects a decline in overall mortgage activity more than anything else. The nature of the complaints continues to be concentrated in loan servicing, as you can see by the bar graphs. And by respondent type on the mortgage banker side, and that's consistent with what we've seen before and with our trends. In terms of page 25, the aging of open complaints, 99% of complaints are aged 90 days or less, so I think that's being managed efficiently. And in terms of closed complaints, there were 111 that related to servicing issues, 99% closed within 90 days. And then 100%, which was closer to the 90 days, on the non-servicing issues. We noted in here that the data for the entire first quarter, of course, will be presented at the next Finance Commission meeting. Any questions on anything that was covered here?
Just a comment, and it applies to all three agencies. Let's keep our bench strength strong, so we have that always at top of mind.
We're trying.
I have seen, or we have seen, that there are more applicants than there were in the past.
Good.
So I think we're beginning to see
when did that start
changing in the last 45 days.
And are those candidates more mature individuals, or is it the younger group that's coming in?
I'd say they're both. I mean, looking back at the interviews we conducted this week for a couple of open positions in which I participated, we had both ends of the barbell. We had very experienced people, a number of people who are in the mortgage industry who've been displaced or who anticipate being displaced. who are looking for a secure employment, alternative employment.
Great, you're getting young people back in the marketplace.
I agree with that. If there were any questions, then I would ask General Counsel Ian Berry to report on the legal and enforcement activity.
Good morning, Chairman Holt, members. Ian Berry, Department of State and Mortgage Lending. Legal activities report continues on page 26 of your packet. Top of page 26, you have a summary of our enforcement action. In September, October, the legal division took 42 enforcement actions. That's followed by recovery claims. We have six pending. Next is our matters that are pending at SOA. There's a total of four listed. Three of those will drop off, having been resolved either through a final order or through a conditional license agreement that rendered the proceeding moot. Page 27, you have the same litigation matter that has been haunting your packet for these many months and actually years. And we're hopeful that that will be resolved soon. We anticipate it'll be heard by the Court of Appeals on the briefings alone, and there will not be oral argument. Page 28, a summary of the Public Information Act request. So far, early in fiscal year 23, September, October, the department has received 45 public information requests. That's in line with what we usually receive. Bottom of, middle of page 28, you have the rulemaking summary. Bottom of page 28, gift reporting. And then the final page, 29, legislative activities. You've heard quite a bit about that already, so I won't belabor the point. And unless you all have any questions, that concludes the legal activities report. And as an early Christmas present to you all, SML has no rules today.
I like this, General Counsel.
Congratulations on the large shoes to fill, Mr. Garcia. It's always been a great asset to the organization. We know you'll fill it. So thank you.
Completely agree. Thank you very much, Chair.
If there are no other questions, then, Mr. Chairman, that concludes the report from the Department
Commission. We'll be moving on to Texas Department of Banking. Commissioner Rodriguez.
Thank you, Chairman. The Department of Banking's report begins on page 33. But before I begin there, I'd just like to acknowledge that the guest, Commissioner Cooper, is not here. So you're graced with my presence. But he is in D.C. He is attending his last Financial Stability Oversight Committee meeting, which is the FSOC meeting. He is concluding his service effective December 31st of this year, so he's attending the last meeting of service. He's been on this committee since 2018 and has been reappointed twice by his colleagues. He has served on that committee and actually contributed to several areas, including climate change, digital assets, and then he helped with the state and federal coordination for the pandemic. So he filled a lot of roles in that committee. So I wanted to acknowledge his service on this important committee and just give him a shout out. Okay, so on page 33, you'll find the Bank and Trust Supervision's division report. You'll see several charts there. There's no updated data at this time because we don't have the first quarter. That will be reported next meeting. On page 35 at the bottom, you'll see the compliance with the examination priorities. There's several bullets at the bottom indicating that we had some exams that were passed due. None of them were more than 30 days, and as of this report, they've all been completed. On page 36 and 37 is a listing of a variety of events and panels that our staff participates on regularly. One to kind of point out to you, on October 19th, Director Dan Frazier, who's in the audience, and examiner Liliana Bossi out of Houston, they went to teach a class for the commercial banking program at Texas A&M. The department regularly participates in this program, and we use it kind of an opportunity to give a little bit of color to what the department does and the industry in general, and we're hoping to continue to do this as a recruiting effort to gain some more people from the universities. On page 37, you'll find the commissioner post-examination survey results. Results were all positive, generally speaking. They indicate basically that examiners are communicating the proper information during examinations. They're viewed very professionally, and courteous and knowledgeable. So that's a plus for us. On page 38 and 39, you'll find the corporate division activities report. Just two items to recognize here. Application volume has declined from the last report. However, if you'll note, for the first three quarters of the previous fiscal years, the number is relatively the same, so it's not anything unusual or relatively close to what we normally see. At the bottom of 39, you'll see that we continue to see more national banks converting in or merging with our state institutions, and we don't anticipate that to decline at all. On page 40 and 41 is the non-depository report. Again, the data will be reported in the first quarter of the next meeting, but preliminary analysis seems to indicate that the group will be able to meet the performance measures for the first quarter. Of special note, as many of you have heard about the negative information in the news about cryptocurrencies, exchanges, and the markets, we are monitoring this. Several firms have filed for bankruptcy. It is, from all indications, that there may be some Texans who are impacted by this. And the media, which of course is reporting losses in the millions, so the department is aware of this. We continue to participate on a joint MSB Enforcement Task Force. The task force is designed to share information about these different types of entities that are out there, to share any issues with licensing, and also any risky behavior that may be occurring. More information on any actions that we have taken will be in the legal report later, but we have taken a few enforcement actions. And along those lines of the same subject matter, on November 17th, Commissioner Cooper was asked to testify at the Business and Commerce hearing on blockchain and virtual currencies. I believe the commission received a copy of the testimony, and it's also available on our website. On page 42 and 43, this is the Human Resources Report. Ms. Lori Wright is in the audience today. A couple of things that they've been working on and have been pretty successful in is continuing the CAPS recruiting moving forward to give us an opportunity to post our job on this particular site to make it easier for applicants to apply. Lori was also successful in hiring an HR specialist who is going to support us in our recruiting efforts after we lost our previous one earlier in the year. And finally, the Bank and Trust Division is taking steps to participate in more college fairs to try to get additional new applicants and candidates for future positions, especially in the examiner role. And in the first quarter, they've attended 14 career fairs. So that's quite a feat for us.
Ms. Rodriguez?
Yes, sir.
Commissioner Rodriguez. On page 43,
yes,
we see this chart every 2 months.
Mm-hmm.
And some of it struck me, I didn't understand. You know, at the top of, I'm looking at the top chart,
mm-hmm.
At the very top, it talks about the number of employees authorized.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering where that number comes from. Like, for example, we're authorized for 205.
So this is the number of FTEs that are approved by the Finance Commission at the budget. So when we do the budget, we propose how many FTEs we need for the year.
So generally, it looks like y'all run at anywhere from 16% to 21% below that. Why is it y'all think you need that many more than if you're operating anyway?
Well, the number of institutions and the complexities continue to get more and more complicated going forward. We continue to see just you replace a few, you get a few that exit out. We lose people to the industry. We've had a lot of retirements that have taken place. Retirements pretty much have increased over the last several years. And so we've tried very hard to continue to hire and recruit people. But the last couple of years, especially during the pandemic, I think we've had a much harder time doing that.
Okay, so like you said, the 205 represents the dollar amount budget that was authorized.
Correct.
Okay.
And we do scatter those throughout the budget. We don't put them all up front. We try to layer it in so that hopefully we don't overly impact it.
And since I've interrupted you already, can we go back to page 39?
39. Yes,
at the bottom, you got the charter conversions, and you got, for example, Worthington became a state bank. I would assume that it's to our advantage to have more state banks. So is there any marketing done to encourage banks to move from national to state, or is it just happens?
I don't know if there's marketing, and I don't think that that's appropriate. Most of the institutions make their own decisions as to whether or not they want to be a state charter bank. We do have information on our website about that. I don't think that we readily go out and recruit institutions. You know, it's kind of strange to be recruiting against your federal counterparts, but we don't really do that. But we do have information on our website. If an institution is interested, you know, they can always set up meetings to come talk to the commissioner and, of course, to corporate and our bank trustee. Okay. So moving on page 45, you'll find the strategic support report. Most of the consumer information is here from the consumer assistance for the first 2 months. The one thing I would like to report, point out is on page 45, there is an increased number of inquiries on the money service businesses. In 2 months, it's 110 inquiries, and this is mostly people who have been calling, trying to get access to their prepaid cards, and they call us first, not realizing we are not the company. So we provide them the information in order to get in contact with them. And usually around the Christmas time, number goes up. On page 51, the commissioning process, I wanted to point out we have commissioned two examiners in the first quarter, and we're hoping to get two more coming in the next couple of months. So we are doing our best there, and it looks like it is working on the training aspect to get our examiners commissioned. Also, the publication that we produced in November, members should have received an email for the Texas Bank Report that was issued, and it has a lot of very good articles in there. And if you've not had a chance to review that, I'd encourage you to do so. And then finally on page 53 is the legal division report, and I'll turn it over to Ms. Catherine Ryer to give that report.
Good morning, members. Catherine Ryer, General Counsel, Texas Department of Banking. Apologize for my voice. Let's see. A few things to talk to you about. The legal report, as Ms. Rodriguez mentioned, begins on page 53. The first three matters there are contested case hearings and one district court case. The district court case, the Office of the Attorney General is representing us in that matter, and we are filing an appeal in the third court of appeals, so that is in play. On the contested case hearing, we have had number of discussions with SOA trying to get our cases set up to be referred. They've been working with their outside vendor for their e-filing service, and that has taken some time, but I think we are now on the road to doing that. We're set up with the vendor. We are arranging some training on the e-filing process, and that should start happening next week. So I'm hopeful that the next time we talk, I will have good news and say that these cases are set at the State Office of Administrative Hearings. Again, as Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez mentioned, we have had a few actions against some of these entities that you may have been hearing about in the news concerning cryptocurrency exchanges. On page 54, under the non-depository supervision section of the orders, one of these FTX you've probably been hearing about, we did issue an emergency order to cease and desist activity. A very complicated matter, but that's where that is with us. Similarly, although a little less dramatic, I guess, would be the BlockFi trading consent order. This actually was a licensed entity with us, one portion of their business that dealt with stablecoins. We did regulate them. They were a licensee. They have gone down the bankruptcy train also, and so we've entered into a consent order with them. We have a couple more that are working in the pipeline. Not ready to talk to you about those yet, but the situation is very concerning. We're working closely with our partners at the AG's office in the bankruptcy division to have our voices heard in those proceedings. So Public information requests, fairly normal activity there. There is one gift mentioned, and that is that the FSOC did provide for Commissioner Cooper's hotel expenses for a meeting in October in Washington, D.C., and then also an FDIC Advisory Committee of State Regulators meeting also in October in Washington, D.C. Airfare was covered there by the FDIC. Following that is the orders table, and that's really all I have, unless you have any questions. So if not, I will invite Deputy General Counsel Marcus Adams to come up and present a election for you.
Good morning. Marcus Adams, Deputy General Counsel for the Department of Banking. I believe we are on page 76 of your materials. On behalf of the department, I'm presenting a proposed amendment to 7TAC 3.37. The purpose of the amendment is to remove the automatic nature of the inflation adjustment to banks' annual assessment rates based on the gross domestic product implicit price deflator index, or GDP-IPD. Say that five times fast. The assessment calculated under 3.37 is intended to cover the costs of the department's operations specific to bank trust supervision. Under 3.36, subsection G, portions of that assessment may be discounted or forgiven when additional revenue is not needed to cover those costs. Since 2015, the department has increasingly reduced the billable assessment rates in each fiscal year. The automatic GDP-IPD adjustment is one of a variety of factors leading to the increase in assessments, assessment rates, and the subsequent percentage forgiven each year. And the department believes that this adjustment would better serve as a tool to be used as needed by the banking commissioner, lessening the reliance upon the forgiveness process to maintain the assessment levels in line with the revenue needs of the department. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Any questions, members?
The calculation, how you calculate that? Any particular model that's utilized?
Which calculation? The GDP IPD?
No, the actual assessment.
The assessment table is located in 7TAC 3.37. If you want specific details on how exactly that's calculated, I'd be happy to call up financial analyst Krisma Jones, because she is the expert on that and can answer those questions if you'd like to. Krisma.
Hi, Krisma Jones, Department of Banking Financial. The bank assessments are based on the assessable assets for our bank institutions. As noted in the table, depending on your size, there is a calculation, and it's calculated on an annual basis, and we collect the quarterly from our institutions.
Yeah, I guess my question was more from 3.3 to 2.9, just to... Is there a back end of that? How was that?
How the reduced percentage is calculated, not reduced.
Oh, okay. So yes, that's just based on where we are as expenditures at the end of the year. So therefore, like, we have our budget, we cover the budget cost, and then towards the end of the year, we will forgive the remaining amount. But typically, we've started off with an annual reduction on the front end, and then kind of make it up in the fourth quarter. If we have, we're not covering expenditures, less travel.
Thank you.
Any other questions, members? If there's anyone in the audience wishing to address the commission on the Department of Banking's rule item number 4, seeing none. Do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments to 7TAC Part 1, Section 337, concerning calculations of annual assessments for banks?
Mr. McCauley, so moved.
Thank you, sir. Is there a second?
Marty Green, second.
Thank you so much. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, and the motion carries.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Further for the Department of Banking.
The only thing that I wanted to point out is the department's legislative report sample that was provided by Savings and Mortgages. It starts on page 56, and this is an example of the report that the department will be providing to you electronically.
Very good.
And that concludes my report.
Thank you so much. Moving on to the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, Commissioner Pettijohn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First up on our agenda is the industry status, and under this item, I know I normally provide you some economic trends report, but today I'd like to share with you our annual publication. You should have this at your place. This is our publication on the availability, quality, and pricing of financial services. This report fulfills several statutory mandates for us that require us to report certain data to the legislature. One of the things it contains, one of the primary things it contains, is a compilation of all the different annual report submissions from many of our different regulated entities. Overall, this report reflects more than 11, the data reported to us, more than 11 million loans representing extensions of credit and liquidity of over $10 billion in 2021 to Texans. Originations increased by 21%. In 2021. This report goes on, that's just a real brief comment on lending volumes. This report goes on to compare financial products, to highlight emerging products, and highlight low-cost lending programs. Again, some of those are required by statute for us to do. The report also will spotlight some economic indicators and trends that provide, I think, some important context to the financial services markets in Texas. For example, beginning on page 25 is a section related to motor vehicle sales data. Now, we do not get annual report submissions yet from motor vehicle dealers, but we've reported to you some of the national as what national trends related to motor vehicles. These are some of the types of data, especially on page 26, 27, I might be reporting to you sort of on our at our Finance Commission bi-monthly meetings. But there's more information, detailed information about that. So this report, and then some of the economic trends, especially related to Texas or further back, national trends on page 37, and some Texas trends starting on page 41. So I think there's some really good information in here. I won't belabor it, but I want to tell you that the report has been provided to the legislative leadership as required. It's been posted on our website. We are very pleased with this report. We're pleased to provide you with a copy of it. I think it's very well done. It really contains important information about the Texas non-depository financial services market. Really want to extend my compliments and appreciation to Carl Hubenthal and Lee Henry for their good work. Carl Givetis for their good work on the preparation of this report. Carl or I would be happy to answer any questions you may have about this report, but I wanted to present it to you. Yes, sir.
Could we maybe have a PDF copy of this?
You will. You can get this PDF. And normally we would have just sent it to you, but I wanted to, again, we'll have the link posted with the Finance Commission materials and we'll follow up with an email to you, but wanted to.
This is a great report.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, would you be willing to give this to the committee chairs once there's no, you know,
Yes. When they are reported, they've already been sent to the existing committee chair. So Senator Schwartner's office already has this, but because we normally send it to the legislative leadership and then to the chairs of our respective committees. But assuming we have new leadership in the House committee, we'll provide copies for that.
I think that'd be great.
You know, one of the questions that I asked Commissioner Retta earlier was the profile of the new, the increase in the applications that we're getting. Mm-hmm. And notwithstanding the fact that we have a very low unemployment rate, I guess the question is, and perhaps we can dig a little bit deeper, is the actual participation rate. Mm-hmm. And folks that left the market that are still eligible or that are, if you will, of employment age, mm-hmm. yet stepped out, I think that might be something that
sure.
If with inflation or if salaries go up, then they may get them back out of the of the market, or get them back into the market, excuse me. And what will that do to, I mean, unemployment's already very low.
Right.
So that might affect our market even further.
Yeah, I agree. And I think I read something recently suggesting that that trend may be on its way, that participation rate may come back a bit. So, okay, we will follow up with your PDF. Any other questions or comments on the report? Okay, moving on to information in our packet, beginning on our report on page 81 is the Consumer Protection and Consumer Assistance Report. And I just wanted to comment briefly about our continued activity on multi-state examinations and large enterprise examinations. You know, we will not probably be seeing much activity early this year in multi-state examinations. Our participation in these exams is very important in the larger context of network supervision enforcement. And so we are continuing. There's a lot of planning going on right now, but those probably come later. But we want to continue to have a leadership role in those types of examinations and continue to actively participate. It requires more time and resources, but we think it's really important and really want to continue to be a leader in that role. As far as staff development, we've been able to we had a previous class of financial examiner ones that were able to be promoted financial examiner two, so we're continuing active development there. We had a July 22 class of financial examiner ones that is progressing nicely, and then we are actively recruiting, actually have completed recruitment, we hope, for a new training class beginning on January 9th, 2023. We have three additional initial financial examiner ones that have been selected, and we're working on a fourth. So we hope to start with the January 2023 class of four, and then we would also anticipate a class in June. Mr. Chairman, you mentioned the bench strength, and this is part of our really active area recruiting and filling that bench. And so we're busy in that particular area. But we're excited about the new folks coming to join us, and we've had really good luck with these two previous classes. Good luck. They're good candidates. They're doing really great work, and we're grateful and continue to work. And compliments to our staff in terms of our training program. I think our training program really does serve them well to build those skills and help us fill that bench. In terms of examinations conducted, this is just a report for 2 months. This isn't even the full quarter. We are behind in year-over-year comparison, but again, it's just 2 months. We've spent a lot of resources on training in this particular period of time, and those commitments for training, as well as some vacancies, are impacting that quarter one performance. But we hope to catch up throughout the year. In terms on page 82, acceptable level of compliance is moving along just fine. We've got a couple of industry groups where we have yet to complete examinations as of the end of October, so those are not showing up on the board yet. But if you look at the trailing 12 months, instead of just 2 months of activity, those are all in an acceptable level for the 12 months combined. On page 83, investigations, were off to a strong start on investigations in fiscal year 23. A lot of those relate to pawn shop issues. Complaints closed. Our complaints closed are up 13% year over year. Again, more activity in motor vehicle sales finance is normal, and pawn activities. But so complaints are still coming in strong, and pawn shop credit access business complaints still continue in the second largest category. Moving on to page 84, just a couple of things to note here. I saw some interesting trends on this data here in terms of two types of complaints. When some of these complaint types hit over 30%, it catches my attention. And so in the CAB payday lending, we see complaints about overcharges or excessive fees have now topped 30%. Now, mind you, that's only 13 complaints total in that category. And in the pawn shop complaints, there's 23 complaints total in the category, and lost or damaged goods is now 39%. So those are, we'll be monitoring those. Again, it's a very small amount of data right now, so that will probably even out, but we'll continue to watch those.
And then, and the ratio of complaints, again, small number of data, property tax lenders has rocketed up to the top, but there's only two complaints. It's really the denominator of only 83 licensees that make that ratio go up so dramatically. So on page 86 is new data on CAB reporting. Of course, there's some in the annual report that I just gave you, and there's some different data in that annual report than this particular quarterly report. This is the data through Q3 2022. You know, new loan originations in 2022 are continuing to show steady growth from what we saw in 2021, with those being up 13% for the first 9 months. I will note between 2021 and 2022, a dramatic drop in the number of locations reporting activity. You can see the number of locations has dropped about 28%. So we're seeing some shrinkage in terms of the number of locations. Also, some interesting trend is in the average fee, and I look at these often on the average fee converted to a daily rate, but you'll see, again, we're divided here between single installment and multiple installment. Between 20 and 21, the average fee for single installment, both payday and title loans, has increased, whereas the average fee for multiple installment, payday, and auto title loans has decreased somewhat. Again, those are somewhat slight, but still those trends are interesting to watch as well. On page 87 is the repossession information. Repossessions in Q3 increased 8.4% from the last quarter, and they're up 6% for the year compared to 2021. So we're seeing a little heightened activity in repossessions on auto title loans. Moving to page 88, on the licensing report, we are dealing with the renewal period for motor vehicle sales finance closed at the end of October. We had 89% of the industry group renew their license. We still usually have some groups that will file their applications. So we'll still probably get a few. We are getting some more of those in. We had projected about 92-93% of that group might renew their license. So we're expecting a bit more. I'm not sure we'll quite get there to the number, but we'll see. But we're still getting some more of those delinquent renewals in. And then we are currently in the renewal cycle for regulated lenders, credit access business, and property tax lenders. Those renewals are all active through December 31st. And we were able to award a 30% discount to regulated lenders on their annual fee, and credit access businesses received a 15% discount on their annual fee. Those discounts are a little bit larger than we initially projected. And so we're grateful funding sources seemed adequate that we were able to enhance those discounts somewhat further. License applications, the volume of new business license applications is coming in at about 116 a month so far in FY23. That's running below where we projected. We're getting about 100, and we projected 135, so we're getting about 116, but unemployee applications are up. But otherwise, fairly normal activity. You can see the licensing dashboard on page 89. You'll see a big drop on the first upper left in the licensee count of motor vehicle licensees dropping off. Those are for entities that did not renew their licenses, and so that's a very typical drop that we see. It's just a timing difference. Last time it showed up in Q1. This time it's, it did show up. The timing difference is the same. It showed up in Q1 22, same thing, Q1 23. And then the bottom right, just overall, you see the net is really fairly stable, a very slight decline. And we'll expect a little bit more decline in Q2 after we finish this other renewal cycle. We'll have some more licensees not renew, and so we'll expect another decline. Kind of sense that there's some little bit retrenchment, but a little bit of strengthening happening too within these particular entities. There's a lot more activity moving online, a little bit less physical location, and so there's just a little bit of restructuring, I think, happening in the market, but still I think the market's doing pretty well overall. On page 90, just a normal report on our financial education activities and communication. Our human resources report is listed as well, and you'll see where our current staffing level is. On the top of page 91, You'll see we've added already in fiscal year 2023, five new hires, and I expect we'll have maybe four more, five more. I'm hoping by the next meeting, so we're continuing active work in that recruitment area.
Commissioner?
Sir?
Top of page 90, TFEE.
Yes, sir.
Have y'all made any adjustments to your goals? Have you made any adjustments to the amount of grants you're willing to issue? And then also note that you say requests are due by January 31st, 2022. So I guess it's...
That should be 2023. Okay. That's a typo.
Yeah.
So the commission made adjustments to the amount of grants to award when we awarded those grants previously, right? And so the current cycle, I think we're at about 409,000 is the cycle of grants that we're in currently. And so we'll begin planning for the next cycle of grants. It'll be starting in next spring. And so that there will be time when we will consider, you know, what the next cycle of grant awards will be. But typically, we had been doing 250 or 300,000. So the last cycle, the Finance Commission enhanced that to 409,000. So we're continuing to push that up. So
part of what I'm referring to is the amount of a single grant that it go up.
Yes, yeah. So that's currently in the process and discussion. You'll see some of that as we go forward. I mean, it did increase, and we will continue to look at that. I mean, it's planned and part of the work that we're looking at for the next cycle. So
thank you.
Yes. Okay, moving on. I really think I'd be happy to answer any other questions, but otherwise I think we're ready to the legal report, and then I'll come back and follow up with some legislative items after the legal report.
Good morning, members. Michael Rigby, General Counsel for the Office of the Credit Commissioner. The legal materials begin on page 94. There are three enforcement cases identified in the legal report. I have some updates on a couple of those. First one's the Clay Cooley entities. After we finished preparing the legal report, SOA did provide the record to the agency. So we have that. Both sides were able to review the record and make copies if they wished. And the record's been sent to the final decision maker. So that's the status of that one. The next one.
We know what the. Can you share what the judge released on that?
Yes. Yeah, so the judge issued a proposal for division back in October. Both sides filed exceptions, these are objections to what the proposed decision found and replies to the exceptions. After that process finished, the judge issued a letter which said, I made a mistake with some of the numbers and conclusions, and she adjusted those numbers. The adjusted numbers reflected an increase to the reasonable documentary fee amount.
In favor of the dealership.
That's correct. Yeah. The case is still in litigation and heavily contested. The final decision has not been made. The proposal for decision is simply a proposal. It's not a final decision. The final decision maker will consider the record and consider the arguments by both parties and determine the final ruling from
and that will be determined by you and your department?
No, it's not. It's we're a small agency, so what happens is the legal authority rests with the commissioner. However, we need to visit with her during any litigation about the appropriate next steps, and therefore the commissioner delegates her authority to issue the final decision to another member of the staff who's isolated from both the commissioner and the legal department. We don't discuss the case with that person. The record goes to that person, and she'll make a final decision.
And will the commission be apprised of that final decision, or is that?
Yes. No, that's public. Yeah.
While this is all going on, does the auto dealership continue to charge the fees that we're charging?
that they elected to not charge the fees that were litigated in the SOA hearing.
So they dropped back to the 150, yes.
In April of 2021, they stopped using the fees that were at issue in the SOA hearing. However, that being said, documentary fees are confidential under the finance code, so I can't talk about fees that any particular dealership charged unless they're already public in the SOA case. And so I can talk about the SOA case because those are an exception to the confidentiality rule. Those have been entered into evidence in the SOA case and are publicly available. And like I said, they're still being litigated.
Thank you.
Sure. Any other questions about Google? All right. The next case listed in your materials is Empire Capital and Loan. The last entry in that description is that it's been docketed at SOA. However, Empire withdrew its request, and the revocation order is final, and the SOA hearing has been canceled. There's no change with respect to Five Star Finance. The next thing in your materials are orders on reporting violations. Those involve pawn shops and cabs. I just want to give you kind of a background information on some of that. There were 24 orders against pawn shops for reporting violations. Most of those are resolved, you know, pretty perfunctorily, but sometimes they bring up other issues, licensing issues that could be the death of an owner, that could be other compliance issues that arise. There's reasons why people don't file their annual report, and sometimes those come up in the course of working on these reporting cases, but we work with each of the licensees to resolve that. Our goal is always to get compliance with the finance code. The next thing I wanted to visit about is page 97, the rule actions. That was on your consent agenda, so there's no further rule actions today. And then finally, something else that's not in your materials, but I thought you might be interested in is I did get a call this week about post-judgment interest rates. This is something that you probably have never heard about. You probably don't know we're even involved with, and we don't even discuss it because the interest rates have been flat for years, if not decades. But with the interest rates moving up, there can be some arguments about, well, what's really going on. And so one of the functions that we have is to, on the 15th of each month, look at the prime rate and determine what the prime rate is for that month. And then we issue what's called a Texas credit letter. And for the following month, that prime rate applies to post-judgment interest. So if you're in a private litigation and there's two parties arguing over something and there's a judgment, there's an interest rate applied.
There's a calculation. There's a ceiling and a floor. There's a number of interest rates that we have responsibility for computing and publishing. And so some of those are on a weekly basis.
Okay.
This particular one Michael's referring to is on a monthly basis. But we file those with the Texas Register every week. We are computing those interest ceilings and amounts. Anyway,
so it's a ministerial act. We're just looking at the prime rate and issuing a report. But, you know, like I said, this has not been an issue for all the time I've been with the agency. But with the recent move in interest rates, I got an unusual call this week from somebody who's in private litigation and was trying to figure out, well, what is the correct amount, because they were moving so quickly. But y'all might be interested in that.
But those are the rates that are used when there's a judgment and they award post-judgment interest in a particular case. That's the rate that gets applied. And courts often take judicial notice of those filings.
That's all I have. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Mike brings to mind one of the things that I've been talking about, thinking about a lot, and that relates to all the different interest rate structures. And there's a very comprehensive omnibus interest rate act in the early 80s in Texas that modified many of the interest rates and the interest brackets and ceilings, and it indexed a lot of those rates
to inflation or other benchmarks. And again, when interest rates don't change a lot, we see, you know, particular ceilings or impact by the statute. But if interest rates start to rise, then we see change in what some of these other rates may be, or change in one of some of these brackets when inflation rates rise. And so for the most part, I think our interest rate structures have really been fairly durable and robust in changing market times. Obviously, that was 40 years ago, and, you know, it does begin to show some signs of age. And there's a lot of talk around some of the industries about potential changes in their rate structures. And those were complicated issues at the legislature. Typically, our agency has a neutral position on questions of rate. And those were hotly contested issues at the legislature, but I know that's an important consideration for many different industry trade groups. And this is the time of year when we start talking about legislation, and I wanted to call your attention to sort of some issues that we've identified on page 99. But I'm having conversations with the different trade groups about their suggestions for legislation and what they may be pursuing. And some of them are talking about whether or not it's appropriate for them to look for, and they have in past sessions as well, but whether it's appropriate to maybe change a bracket or look at a different rate structure. And so those conversations are going on. On page 99 are some issues that our agency has identified. These are mostly technical changes, sort of a cleanup bill, if you will. Many of these probably should have been included in our sunset bill, but either somehow got omitted or didn't get picked up. Maybe we requested it, but somehow it didn't get picked up. So there's a number of issues that are just sort of technical cleanup kind of issues. Just wanted to bring that forward for your information so you were aware of what we were working on. And then on page 101 are the bills that we have. We have 10 bills that we have identified right now that are on your Finance Commission report. Obviously, we have many other tracks, and we track a whole lot of different bills that relate to agency administration and a lot of other different kinds of issues, bills that are sort of important to, might affect operations of our industry, but not in such a dramatic fashion, like titling of motor vehicles is something we follow a lot of the issues on that, but it's not significant enough to rise to your report. So just, I'd be happy to answer any questions about legislation, but I did want to mention that. And if there are no questions, Mr. Chairman, that concludes the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner report for today.
Any other questions, members? Seeing none, there being no further business to discuss, the meeting of the Finance Commission is now adjourned. The time is 10:10. Everybody have a happy holiday season. Travel safe, and we'll see you in the